going to try, since we're in the Old Testament can a lot of times be really confusing if you don't know the whole story. What's going on? Why are we reading this? Where are we at? So I just want to give a couple of minutes here just to kind of bring us up to speed. We're going to start reading in Exodus, and kind of the story up to this point is the world needed saving. God communicated to Abraham, hey, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make you a nation, and through you, you're going to be a blessing to all the other nations of the world. Abraham's family grew up. He was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob became the whole nation of Israel. The Israelites went down to Egypt. They thrived, and then they were enslaved by the Egyptians, and for 400 years they were slaves, and they needed rescuing. God sent a rescue, and long story short, he did rescue them, and then we get to Exodus. They leave Egypt, and then they're in the desert, and they're supposed to be going to a promised land, and in the meantime, there's a lot of wandering around and things going on, and at this point in the story, the Israelites are out of Egypt, and God is communicating with Moses on a mountain. His expectations, he's giving him, like, laws and rules and different things, and that's where we're going to pick it up. So, Jonathan, if you want to kick us off here.
Each year, you must celebrate three festivals in my honor. First, celebrate the festival of the unleavened bread. For 7 days, the bread you eat must be made without yeast. Just as I commanded you, celebrate this festival annually at the appointed time in early spring. In the month of Abib, for that is the anniversary of your departure from Egypt, no one may appear before me without an offering. Second, celebrate the festival of harvest when you bring me the first crops of your harvest. Finally, celebrate the festival of the final harvest at the end of the harvest season when you have harvested all the crops from your fields. At these three times each year, every man in Israel must appear before the sovereign, the Lord. You must not offer the blood of my sacrificial offerings together with any baked goods containing yeast, and do not leave the fat from the festival offerings until the next morning. As you harvest your crops, bring the very best of your first harvest to the house of the Lord your God. You must not cook a young goat in its mother's milk. See, I am sending an angel before you to protect you on your journey and lead you safely to the place I have prepared for you. Pay close attention to him and obey his instructions. Do not rebel against him, for he is my representative, and he will not forgive for your rebellion. But if you are careful to obey him, following all my instructions, then I will be an enemy to your enemies, and I will oppose those who oppose you. For my angel will go before you and bring you into the land of Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hivites, and Jebusites, so you may live there, and I will destroy them completely. You must not worship the gods of these nations or serve them in any way, or imitate their evil practices. Instead, you must utterly destroy them and smash their sacred pillars.
You must serve only the Lord your God. If you do, I will bless you with food and water and will protect you from illness. There will be no miscarriages or infertility in your land, and I will give you long, full lives. I will send my terror ahead of you and create panic among all the people whose lands you invade. I will make all your enemies turn and run. I will send terror ahead of you to drive out the Hivites, Canaanites, and Hittites, but I will not drive them out in a single year because the land would become desolate and the wild animals would multiply and threaten you. I will drive them out little at a time until your population is increased enough to take possession of the land. And I will fix your boundaries from the Red Sea to the Mediterranean Sea, and from the eastern wilderness to the Euphrates River. I will hand over to you the people now living in the land, and you will drive them out ahead of you. Make no treaties with them or their gods. They must not live in your land, or they will cause you to sin against me. If you serve their gods, you will be caught up in the trap of idolatry. Then the Lord instructed Moses, come up here and bring along Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 of Israel's elders. All you must worship from a distance. Only Moses is allowed to come near to God. The others must not come near, and none of the other people are allowed to climb up the mountain with him. Then Moses went down to the people and repeated all the instructions and regulations the Lord had given him. All the people answered with one voice, we will do everything the Lord has commanded. Then Moses carefully wrote down all the Lord's instructions. Early the next morning, Moses got up and built an altar at the foot of the mountain. He also set up 12 pillars, one for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent some of the young Israelite men to present burnt offerings and to sacrifice bulls as peace offerings to the Lord.
Accept the contributions from all those parts. I move to offer them. Here is the list of scarce offerings. You may may accept from them gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine linen, goat hair, or clothes, and ram skins, fine goat skins, leather, ink, cute wood, olive oil for all the lamps, spices for all the anointing oil, and bread the fragment, incest, only X stones, other gemstones to be sent, and the leaf bud and the priest's chest piece. Have the people of Israel build me a holy sanctuary so I can live among them. You must build this temporary and it's all set precinct exactly according to the pattern I will show you. I have the people make an art of ancient wood and cast 40 inches, 45 inches long, 27 inches wide, and 27 inches high. Overlay it inside and outside with pure gold and run a molding of the gold all around it. Cast for gold rings and attach them to its 4 feet to rings on each side. Make holes from ancient wood and overlay them with gold. Insert the poles rings at the sides of the ark. To carry it, those carrying poles must stay inside the rings, never remove them. When the ark is finished, place inside the stone tab seal, instructable with the terms of this covenant, which I give you, then make an ark covenant. Be a place of anointment from pure gold. It must be 45 inches long and 27 inches wide. Then make 2 stair beams from hammered gold and place them on the 2 ends of the ornament. Cover mold the cherubim and each other end of the antimony cover making it all one piece of gold. Then the cherubim would face each other and look down on the ointment, covered with their wings spread above it. They will protect it. Place inside the ark the stone tables, instructable with the terms of the covenant, which I will give you to you. Then put an ointment covered on top of the ark. I will meet with you there to talk to you from above the ointment covered between the gold, given that whoever over the ark of the covenant from there I will give you commands for the people of Israel.
Then make a table of acacia wood 36 inches long, 18 inches wide, and 27 inches high. Overlay it with pure gold and run a gold molding around the edge. Decorate it with a 3-inch border all around and run a gold molding along the border. Make 4 gold rings for the table and attach them at the 4 corners next to the forelegs. Attach the rings near the border to hold the poles that are used to carry the table. Make these poles from acacia wood and overlay them with gold. Make special containers of pure gold for the table, bowls, ladles, pitchers, and jars to be used in pouring out liquid offerings. Place the bread of the presence on the table to remain before me at all times. Make a lampstand of pure hammered gold. make the entire lampstand and its decorations of one piece. The base, center stem, lamp cups, buds, and petals. Make it with 6 branches going out from the center stem, 3 on each side. Each of the 6 branches will have 3 lamp cups shaped like almond blossoms, complete with buds and petals. Craft the center stem of the lampstand with 4 lamp cups shaped like almond blossoms, complete with buds and petals. There will also be almond bud beneath each pair of branches where the 6 branches extend from the center stem. The almond buds and branches must all be one piece with the center stem, and they must be hammered from pure gold. Then make the 7 lamps for the lampstand and set them so they reflect their light forward. The lamp snuffers and trays must also be made of pure gold. You will need 75 pounds of pure gold for the lampstand and its accessories. Be sure that you make everything according to the pattern I have shown you here on the mountain.
Matthew 24. Immediately after the anguish of these days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will give no light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then at last, the Son of Man is coming will appear then in the heavens, and there will be deep mournings among all the peoples of the earth. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the heaven with a power and great glory, and he will send out his angels with a mighty blast of the trumpet, and they will gather his chosen ones from all over the world, from the farthest ends of the earth and heaven. Now learn a lesson from the fig tree. When its branches bud and its leaves begin to sprout, and you know that summer is near. Then, in the same way, when you see all these things, you can know his return is very near, right at the door. I tell you the truth. This generation will not pass from the sense until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will disappear, but my words will disappear.
However, no one knows the day or hour when these things will happen, not even the angels in heaven or the Son himself. Only the Father knows. When the Son of Man returns, it will be like it was in Noah's day. In those days before the flood, the people were enjoying banquets and parties and weddings right up to the time Noah entered his boat. People didn't realize what was going to happen until the flood came and swept them all away. That is the way it will be when the Son of Man comes. 2 men will be working together in the field. 1 will be taken, the other left. 2 women will be grinding flour at the mill. 1 will be taken, the other will be left. So you too must keep watch, for you don't know what day your Lord is coming. Understand this: if a homeowner knew exactly when a burglar was coming, he would keep watch and not permit his house to be broken into. You also must be ready at all times, for the Son of Man will come when least expected. A faithful, sensible servant is one to whom the master can give the responsibility of managing his other household servants and feeding them. If the master returns and finds that the servant has done a good job, there will be a reward. I tell you the truth, the master will put that servant in charge of all he owns. But what if the servant is evil and thinks my master won't be back for a while? And he begins beating the other servants, partying and getting drunk. The master will return unannounced and unexpected, and he will cut the servant to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
So Psalm 30. I will exalt you, Lord, for you rescued me. You refused to let my enemies triumph over me. O Lord, my God, I cried to you for help, and you restored my health. You brought me up from the grave, O Lord. You kept me from falling into the pit of death. Sing to the Lord, all you godly ones. Praise his holy name. My bad, I just lost my spot. What page are we at? 40. Yep. All right, there we go. Okay, there we go. Sorry about that. Sing to the Lord, all you godly ones. Praise his holy name. For his anger lasts only a moment, but his favors last a lifetime. Weeping may last through the night, but joy comes in the morning. When I was prosperous, I said, nothing can stop me now. Your favor, O Lord, made me as secure as a mountain. Then you turned away from me, and I was shattered. I cried out to you, O Lord. I begged the Lord for mercy, saying, what will you gain if I die, if I sink into the grave? Can my dust praise you? Can I tell of your faithfulness? Hear me, Lord, and have mercy on me. Help me, O Lord. You've turned my mourning into joyful dancing. You've taken away my clothes of mourning and clothed me with joy, that I might sing praises to you and not be silent. O Lord my God, I will give you thanks forever. So listen to me, my sons, and pay attention to my words. Don't let your heart stray away toward her. Don't wander down her wayward path, for she has been the ruin of many, many men, have been her victims. Her house is the road to the grave. Her bedroom is the den of death. And that is.
Hey. I had a thought that I wanted to share here just as we've been reading this week. Kind of saw a theme and a little bit of a motif, partially from what we had read in the one-year portion, but it also reminded me of another excerpt that we see in the Gospels elsewhere. And so let's just start with those verses. The first that I saw was Matthew chapter 23, verses 2 through 4. And I think this was almost a week ago. This might have been from last Sunday's portion. But it says this, the teachers of religious law and the Pharisees are the official interpreters of the law of Moses. So practice and obey whatever they tell you, but don't follow their example. For they don't practice what they teach. They crush people with unbearable religious demands and never lift a finger to ease the burden. And that's Jesus talking to his disciples. And you can understand, he doesn't undermine the position of authority, and he doesn't undermine the law of Moses, but he does say, this isn't the heart of a leader. This isn't the example of a leader that I would want you to follow. And then again, in Matthew 23, verse 11, he says, I mean, it's kind of the same passage there, but the conclusion was, the greatest among you must be a servant, But those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. It's a difference in our culture, in terms of like what our culture esteems versus what Jesus esteems. And another passage in Matthew is similar. Going back to Matthew chapter 20, verses 25 through 28, Jesus said this. But Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people, and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. But among you it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others, and to give his life as a ransom for many." There again, there's that same motif. Jesus saying that service is what makes you great, right? And if you're a servant in America, well, you're just pretty lowly, right? That's you're a nobody. And Jesus is saying that's the greatest thing. One more thing that I thought was just fascinating, I had to go back and see, this was in my head, and I just wanted to confirm it. And it's true, I found it in Luke 12, verses 35 through 38. Jesus is talking again, and this is what he said. He said, "Be dressed for service and keep your lamps burning as though you were waiting for your master to return from the wedding feast. Then you will be ready to open the door and let him in the moment he arrives and knocks. The servants who are ready and waiting for his return will be rewarded. I tell you the truth, he himself will seat them, put on an apron, and serve them as they sit and eat. He may come in the middle of the night or just before dawn, but whenever he comes, he will reward the servants who are ready." And this is really interesting because in this picture, what Jesus is saying is, I will return. I'm telling you, I'm instructing you to serve. I'm giving you a duty, and I want you to serve in that duty. And just do it well. And if you do it well, I will return and I will serve you because you served well elsewhere. And so this is just kind of the thought that I want to share. I've been just kind of mulling this over, the significance of Jesus making much of serving. Years ago, I just had this idea. I wrote a paper that was called "The World at Half Past Civilized," and I made this. I had this theory going that there's a floor and there's a ceiling to what civilization looks like, and we can imagine the floor pretty easily. If there's not enough to go around, people aren't going to be that civil towards each other, right? There's going to be tons of difficulty. There's going to be fighting, tension. It's not going to be, if there's not enough to go around, we're not going to be much of a society. But once you kind of cross that floor and there's enough to go around and everybody can have what they need and the basic needs are all met, then you've got a society. But my theory was that there's also there's a ceiling to society that's beyond which, if you become so unbelievably affluent, you just sort of spiral off into no man's land, you know? And I've been reading G.K. Chesterton's The Everlasting Man thing, and he does this kind of synopsis of history, and it's really interesting. He's like, you know, honestly, the world powers that rise and fall, it is interesting. It just seems like they get over-civilized, and that becomes their destruction. And what I think is really interesting is just this idea that what Jesus is saying, I think, is if you do become blessed, and if you're affluent, or if you have extra time, or you have extra resources, turn that around and go serve the people who need it the most. Does that make sense? It's just interesting. When we think about colonial America, I mean, if you just got off the Mayflower, there is work to do. If you want to live, you need to work hard. And when the sun comes up, as soon as you see it, you start working. And you work all the way until the sun goes down. Because life is hard. It's just not easy. And then you advance a little bit through our culture, and we get to the Industrial Revolution, and we can do a lot more to produce things. It gets a lot easier to plow fields and make all the food that you need for a year. In fact, you can have more than you need. You can make enough food for 20 families just with your own labor. And by the way, that's not sun up to sun down. That's, you know, maybe 10 or 12 hours a day or something like that. We're starting to get way ahead of what we really need. Does that make sense? And now we've gotten to a point where we've got unions. You know, we get 40 hours a week or it's not fair. We get weekends or it's not fair. We get paid time off. You only have to work 40 hours a week and you can make way more than you need. And what do we do with that extra? Well, I'm going to go see a movie. I'm going to go out to eat. I'm going to buy a summer home. We got like all these plans, right? For what we're going to do. And I'm not saying that these are bad things. But what I am saying is that it gets easier and easier. And now all of a sudden, look at us. We're at a point in our nation where it is not unheard of. It's almost a trend. There are people who are able to work. They just don't want to. Because they can have enough without even having to work. And this is the point. When I'm talking about ceiling of civilization, there gets to be this point where it gets so easy to meet our needs that instead of really applying ourselves or challenging ourselves or trying to still fit needs or meet needs or serve each other, we just get lazy and we get selfish. I think that's what happens. And that's how world powers can fall. Most of the time, it's not that world powers are falling because they just got overpowered. No one else was more powerful than them anyway. But from the inside out, perhaps they just got lazy or didn't have a vision or they weren't disciplined and they were able to be just overthrown or taken advantage of or usurped or whatever it was. My concept is this. What we see from Jesus in these passages are, if you're blessed, be a blessing. The greatest person serves. And here, I think we just see the difference in mindset of those who lead. What Jesus was saying before was, you know how the world works. When people get a leg up, they tend to keep that leg up, right? They try to keep the people beneath them down. If they got this far ahead, they work to make sure they can stay that far ahead. But that will actually destroy a culture. That model will. What Jesus is saying is, if you get a leg up, good for you. But use it to go turn right back around and to serve the lowly. And what I think is interesting here is that the concept is, I think God has it all balanced out. There's a ceiling to civilization. And if you have so much above that ceiling that you would just spiral out into orbit and become self-absorbed and selfish and run away from everybody, God is saying, take all that extra and go find those who can't even get above the floor and help them come above the floor. And I think that if we took all the extra from the resources of those who have much and put it into the poor, then it would bring those above the ceiling back into that little window, and it would bring those below the floor up into the window as well, and everything would work. Here's an important point though. Jesus is talking about the heart. Jesus wasn't a communist. He's not saying we're going to distribute wealth, just willy-nilly. What he's talking about is a heart. If we're blessed, we should be servants also. We should have the heart of servants. We should develop and cultivate the heart of servants so that we remember, put work into remembering those who are more needy than us. And if we can help those who are more needy than us, then great. Like then we all bring each other along. And it reinforces the togetherness of being in a community together. So that's what I see from Jesus, and that's what really strikes me. And then the last aspect of this was, I was just thinking about it in heaven. What's that going to look like in heaven, right? Everybody's going to have enough in heaven. There's going to be an abundance in heaven. We will still have the opportunity to serve one another in heaven. And I just think it's so cool, because as I imagine it, I think there's relationship that's caught up in service as well, right? We all know what it feels like to be served when somebody sees a need that we have and they desire to help us. A lot of times it matters more that this person took initiative to help us than even the need that was met, right? And we're going to get to enjoy that through all of eternity. And then just in principle, there's the fact that if we lead that way, if we lead by the model that Jesus gave us, that we're just to care, we're to serve. And if you're promoted to a point of leadership, we're to use that specifically to get beneath everybody else and make sure everybody else is taken care of. Community, society, those kind of things, like that'll be sustained forever. So there were three kind of summarizing thoughts that I put down here. Just thinking about how Jesus spoke on leadership. And the first is this: service is a mindset that drives us to use our success and excess to remember and esteem those more needy than ourselves. And this doesn't even need to be, it doesn't even need to be people who are more needy than, just remembering others. Learning to help, learning to see opportunities and say, if there's a need, that's my heart. My heart is at least that I want to be a part of it. I was talking to a friend today and I was just saying, it's kind of interesting, just stage of life. You know, when Melissa and I were first married, you know, we were two autonomous adults and we were both working and we had more opportunity to give to various things. And things have changed now for us, where we've got two kids and a third on the way and different things to plan for and different things to be ready for. But when the opportunities arise and when needs are presented here, even just in our own church family, there's this feeling of like, the chance to serve, the chance to support, the chance to do whatever we can do to help others, I feel like I am buying stock in glory. Does that make sense? I am like proud to stand with what we're trying to do and say, yeah, like I want to be a part of that because this is going to be a really cool story someday and I want in. And it's weird because like we used to be able to give more and it's different now feeling like, well, I don't know if I have as much. Doesn't matter. Whatever we can do, that's what I want to do. Because this is a mindset. That's the idea. Yeah. Let's move on to number two, the practice. The practice of service keeps us all connected. One of God's main themes of existence. And it keeps us all cared for because of the care of someone who will be your new friend. My point, I think, in saying all that is just that service facilitates relationship. And the substance of existence is relationship, right? I think you look at, why did Jesus die? It was for relationship. He wanted us back. He lost us. He wanted us back. What fulfills life, right? Do people go to their deathbeds and they say, show me my Swiss bank account. Show me the balance one more time, because that's, nobody's asking for that, right? It doesn't mean anything. No one says, bring me my diploma. I just want to see it one more time, right? Nobody's thinking that. All the things that Americans say, this is important, nobody's asking for those things on their deathbed. That's not what makes life amazing. Relationships are what makes life amazing. And if we're willing to serve the way that Jesus wants us to serve, we are de facto going to prioritize relationships. We're going to, and what we're going to find is inclusion, restoration. We're going to find community growing, nurtured, gaining momentum. We're going to find healing in a lot of places. I mean, like just everything will get better, right? And it makes sense, right? If we live for our own personal glory, you're going to have, there's like maybe 20, 25 of us in this room right now. You're just going to have 20, 25 different lines going totally different places. But if we all take all of those lines and say, well, let's serve each other, they're all going to start intertwining and circling, and there's going to be a connection there, right? If we use leadership the way that God wants us to lead, if we lead the way he instructs us to lead, there's going to be healing everywhere. Because the whole point is remembering everyone and trying to make sure everyone's taken care of. And I like this. This is maybe the most impactful one for me. As I was thinking about it, it's just that this is not going to stop in heaven. In heaven, I don't believe anyone will be humbler than Jesus. And I don't believe anyone's going to outserve him. That's what astonished me about that Luke passage. Are you kidding? We're your servants. We're just doing our job. And you're saying, if we do our job well enough, you will show up and you will serve us. unbelievable. Jesus will serve the servants. There is nobody who will be humbler than him. There's nobody who will outserve him. And thus, I do not think it will be a coincidence that no one will be greater than him in the kingdom of heaven. I think that's a really true statement. I mean, of course it is. Jesus said it, but I don't think it's even just specific to this earth. So the greatest among you will be the servant of all. Jesus will be the servant of all in heaven. That's how he leads. And the same, and it makes sense to me because, again, in societies, when we see world powers rise and fall, where does it fall? It falls when everyone goes off into individualism to the point that there is no society anymore, right? Different expressions of that, different circumstances. I mean, I realize there's some battles involved oftentimes, but those battles happen at points that the world power is already weakened because of typically individualism, like just going way out of proportion. In heaven will be an eternal kingdom. And I believe this is what will make it an eternal kingdom, is that we have a God who is not in it for himself. We have a God who is humble and who is a servant. We have a God who is willing. He's not offended. It almost seems like he delights to put himself under the weakest ones of his, to serve them and esteem them. And if that goes on forever and ever, how could there be an end to this society? Because it's just constantly going to be reinforced by someone who gives up what they could claim a right to in order to serve and make much of those who don't have a right at all. Pretty incredible to me. I appreciate that Jesus had his heads up on that one and just gave us a look into, this is what leadership is for. This is what love looks like. If any of you think, I just want to say this, I feel like it's always worth making a note of this. If any of you think that just because this occurred to me or I'm able to say, put these thoughts together or to say them, if any of you think that I'm extraordinarily good at this type of leadership, any of you can ask my wife and she will tell you 40% of the time, maybe. truth is, I know that I like my, I like stories, I like to watch movies, I like candy, I like a lot of things, and I like to get what I like. I've had this thought as well here, just that, guys, I just want us to all be together and say, that's where we're heading. I don't want to make it even remotely sound like we're there or like I'm there, but my thought this week, as I've been thinking about this, like, man, am I really going to share these thoughts? And I'm such a selfish person. My thought has just been, you know, I may be a bad shot, but that's no reason to change the target. That's no reason to move it. That's still the goal. That's still the target. That's where we're trying to get. And I'm not there yet. I'm not going to be there until kingdom come and Jesus gives me a completely new heart. But that's where I'm shooting for. I certainly don't want to say, well, what I'm doing is just fine then. Well, let's just say I got a long ways to go, but I got the rest of my life to work on it too. And I just think we can encourage each other to try and lead this way, to try and love this way, and just to try and use all the blessings that God has given us to try and serve one another and encourage one another and keep each other going on down the road. So that's the thought. That's what I wanted to share. Let's go ahead and pray and we'll keep the morning moving here. God, I do just thank you so much for the way that you're mindful. I thank you that you know us. God, you know us better than we know ourselves. And I just thank you that this is your whole thing. God, you all of your motives seem to lead back to wanting to be in relationship with us. And God, if you want to love me, part of the way that you want to love me is also through the other members here in Lifehouse Church. And part of the way that you want to love all the other members of Lifehouse Church is by giving me things that I can do to try and show them how much you love them and how much you think about them. I thank you that you want it all for each of us. You want us to be humanized. You want us to all be able to understand that you see us, that we're seen, we're known, we're loved, we're wanted, we belong. We should be affirmed. We should be encouraged. We should be challenged. sometimes even like rebuked or opposed for the sake of building up and growing and improving. God, all these things are things that you desire for each one of us, God. And what it means to me is that you love us. God, is just that we are the apple of your eye. And I just thank you that you've given us that position with you. God, Jesus, I thank you so much for all the work and all the service that you did to win us back to you. We were helpless, and you did all the work to bring us back to you. And now you have given us a glorious position in the family business, Lord, and what a glory it is. And what a glory we will see it to be when we finally get to be with you unhindered and uninhibited in heaven. But until that time, God, I just pray that you'd help us to encourage one another and to serve one another, to develop the heart that really wants to see each other growing and that claims a stake in having a role to play in our brothers and sisters growing. And God, I pray that you just build us up and build us together. Thank you so much that you've given us the example to follow, and I pray that you'd help us to grow in following you. I commit this to you in Jesus' name. Amen.
We're making a plan B. Do you want me to introduce the offering? Do you have a thought for the offering? Okay. Let's talk about it like this, and we'll come up with a thought for the offering. Hey, actually, I do. I have a thought. Our reading today, let's see. This was straight out of the gate. what the first verse that we read